Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I'm joined by Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham, who are both pastors of Christ Church, Haywards Heath. This week we welcome Chap Bettis onto the Ordinary podcast. Chap is the author of Disciple Making Parent, and so unsurprisingly today we are talking parenting. The guys cover issues around discipline, parental influence, relationship building, and how to best approach parenting from a biblical point of view, having discipleship as a priority. So enjoy the podcast, and I'll catch you on the other side.
Hello, my name's Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Bentham.
And this is Ordinary. And today we have a very special guest who's out in the States, and Mark's going to introduce him for us.
Yeah, we're really excited to have Chap Bettis on with us. Chap is the author of Disciple Making Parents, a book that we have recommended from the front often at church. We've run a four-week course on it because we found it really helpful, and we thought it'd be really good just to have a chat with Chap. So how are you today, Chap? Give us a little bit of information about how you are, where you are, and background of family and all of that kind of exciting stuff.
Sure. Thank you. Well, thanks for having me on. I am in Providence, Rhode Island. So that's next to Boston. And I grew up in the southern part of the United States, Alabama. And I grew up in a Christian home and kind of had a little bumpy transition to my faith. But it ended up coming up to college. And stayed because of the New England area is really needy, about 3% evangelical, so very similar to England there, and ended up planting and pastoring a church for 25 years. And then just 7 years ago, felt like the Lord was calling me to do this ministry full time. So my wife and Sharon and I have been married 31 years and have four children, all in their 20s. So that's a little bit about us right now.
So when you say New England is a bit like England, is it not definitely not the kind of Bible Belt areas? It would be more kind of typical of the secular kind of Europe culture.
Yes. So it's hostile, indifferent, apathetic, and becoming more so, which actually I find growing up in the South is somewhat refreshing because the people who are at church want to be at church. So they're not there for the insurance sales or real estate connections that you're going to make. They're there because they want to worship the Lord. So there are challenges, but at the same time, there are also blessings as well, that in general, Christians in New England are very serious about their faith.
That would be similar to over here in that sense, that those in the churches are certainly keen. And I guess that then plays out into how we then raise our children, because we want to take this seriously. We want to do it right. What made you write Disciple Making Parent?
Well, I had, as I alluded to before, so I grew up in a Christian home, and my parents were earnest Christians. There wasn't a lot of teaching when I was a young person, and so they did the best they could. The church I was in had some hypocrisy issues, and so I would say that when I went to college, I would have said, Jesus, maybe, church, no way. So really having a bumpy transition to an adult faith. And those questions got, my intellectual questions got settled in terms of Jesus and the reality of the resurrection, and this is true. And then I got, in a sense, reconverted to the church. I had a great church experience up here, saw God's plan was for the church. So ended up feeling like God's call in my life is to plant and pastor a church here in New England. So then, though, as my wife and I were having our children, really wanting to be intentional, thinking, what am I trying to do? We're living in a hostile area, and they're going to face challenges to their faith. So it's not just the stream of the South where you just go along and everybody sort of, it's easy to say we're all Christians. how am I going to intentionally pass my faith? And then God supernaturally brought some other families that were very like-minded, and so we began searching the scriptures, learning from each other, and I really began to see what I felt was connections with the scripture, and then passing on my faith. Once I realized that, these are eternal souls God has given to me. So, how am I going to be a spiritual leader? So those. We were discovering those things, and as I was preaching, just really seeing a lot of connections. And so then, when I started having kids, looked around, didn't feel like there was a resource that specifically was helpful in this way. Some good parenting 101 resources, but not disciple making. And then again, as my kids were getting older, looking around and saying, I really don't feel like there's anything out there like that that's principle based. And so that's kind of what led me to research it and then write it.
Yeah. What's the basic premise of the book? If I say what I think it starts off with, at least, is the idea that the Great Commission applies to our children as much as to anyone else, and that in terms of our families, parents are the primary teachers. And is that fair? Is that kind of, that's the premise of the book? It then goes to kind of work that out in practice. Is that what's behind it?
Yeah, that's completely. And I would say that's even a theme from the Old Testament, that God's plan with Adam and Eve was to fill the earth with glory bearers, and Jesus reinstates that in the Great Commission. And so the intention has been always that part of the way that our faith is passed on is through our physical children. So yeah, absolutely, and that. Children's ministries can come alongside to help, but we're the primary disciple makers.
Yeah, and the difference between some of the other books, because you've got kind of how-to books, like the 101 books you were talking about, which are more how to have routines for discipline and, you know, loving discipline, those sort of things. You've got the maybe kind of Paul Tripp style, which are more looking at kind of heart issues, and some of that overlaps with what you're doing. But how is what you're writing in your book distinctive from those, not necessarily competing with, but complementary to those?
Well, I appreciate some of the reviews have referenced that the book's filled with wisdom, and I appreciate those that because I think what I'm trying to do is to say, okay, let's look at the big picture. I'm to make disciples, and then how do I actually do that? And how do you challenge parents without coming up with an ABC list and making them feel guilty, realizing life happens? And so how do I make disciples with a theological basis, but then some very practical things, like how do we communicate well? Is our home loving and joyful? Do I even understand the gospel? Can I explain it? So all those things, I think, are coming out, I'm trying to articulate and help equip parents.
And I, for one, have found it really helpful as right in the midst of parenting right now with two just kind of teenage boys. And so I found it that actually what I think that for me the great benefit was as well, that it brought together lots of stuff that was in lots of other, but all into one place and kind of connecting it all up, which actually I found really helpful to be able to, oh yeah, I can see, you know, I know I've got a heart, I know I've got to teach the gospel or communicate, how do I communicate? And you can read lots of different bits, but I found actually here was the wisdom all in one place, all trying to do what I know I needed to do as a parent, to disciple my boys well. But before we just kind of jump into all the kind of all the good, what would you see are the biggest struggles for parents today? So, there's always, parenting has never been easy on one level, let's face it. But what are the particular struggles that you are seeing or coming across as you teaching on this material that the Christians particularly are facing right now?
Well, I'm very hesitant to talk about England. I can talk about what I see here. I think that there's a big temptation, really, with any parents, to focus on the temporal and not the eternal. And so every parent wants to give their child the best. Our functional theology comes out when we start making choices for our kids. So there's nothing wrong in, for example, in the United States with football or soccer, or sports, or all those things are good things, but is the Great Commission the North Star, the thing I keep coming back to? And so when I feel that catch in my stomach with young children, my child's not taking dance, my child's not doing this, doing that, to say, well, wait, what is the North Star? And then once I've got that focus, then I can figure out, well, maybe they should take dance, maybe they should do soccer, or maybe we take a year off, because the ultimate goal, most of these kids are not going pro, you know? And so at 22, 24, you want them to be walking with the Lord. So I think that's a temptation, especially in the United States. And then it's easy. And I'm very thankful for children's ministers and youth ministers who've been very helpful. But it's easy just to outsource that and say, I don't know how to disciple my kids. I don't understand what this is. And I'm good. I'm going to this church because they have a strong youth program.
Yeah, I think our two countries are not that dissimilar. I think there would be two big areas that we would wrestle with and struggle. And I think particularly we're seeing that over here is that, you know, actually it's that sense of making sure that my kid has everything they can have and the best of everything. And actually, as you helpfully say, what is the North Star? What is actually the most important? What's going to be the priority for our week and our family life that we're seeking to model to our children? But actually that temptation and that other temptation of just saying, actually, okay, we've got great youth workers, great children's workers, and we're thankful in our church that we do, but actually they're not the ultimate answer. Actually, the answer is how we gonna, as parents, do that. So let's begin to think a little bit about how the book helps us in that. I don't know, do you want to start, kick off? I mean, I love the whole stuff on the heart, going for the heart, tackling the heart, communicate. I think that's just really helpful, but you may want to start somewhere else. We're happy to be led by you on that one, Jack. But
just one thing on the way that I noticed while you're thinking perhaps about that was the encouragement, because some of the statistics, but I basically taught this as a four-week course for a group of parents, male and female, then just a group of only lady parents in another forum. And actually in both sets, but particularly the families that were there with husband and wife, they got depressed by the first bit, which is, do you realize how many Christian family kids drop out of being Christians? And so some of them, particularly those who are keen Christians, were kind of, so what we got to do, kind of panicked. But also the great encouragement in the book that actually your child's spiritual development, God will use as the means of grace, your parenting, and actually you're the biggest influencer on them. And I think that gave a lot of people encouragement, because they were maybe thinking, lots of kids don't become Christians as adults, and culture is so pervasive and compelling, and you know, what am I going to do? And I think, as well as knowing lots of things to do that we're going to talk about, they also need confidence that under God, as they prayerfully seek to influence their kids, they are a really significant influence. I don't know if you do it in your book, but I gave the example of accents and expressions. You know, it's amazing how your kids pick up your accent, even if it's not the one of the area they're in. You're much more significant to them than you think. And I found that encouraging as well. But as well as all the other stuff on the way. But this was like principled stuff kind of behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just to encourage, cool. I mean, my son is in his 20s, and he's a couple times he said to me, Dad, I can still hear your voice. So that's, you know, got that putting in and knowing that God is using that. And then, I would say our goal is to be faithful parents and not successful, in the sense their salvation is not a works program, not their works and not ours. So you can't parent your child well enough to change their heart. God can do that. But having said that, we can be faithful. We can have tons and tons of influence. Taking that weight off, off of ourselves. And, you know, you were talking about, Mark, before. I just wanted to go back to that comment. I think, you know, if we feel this pressure to give our kids everything, it really, what we're creating is a very child-oriented. Augustine says sin causes us to curve in on ourselves. And so when we're teaching our kids that it's all about us. So part of our job as parents is to go, no, we can't do that. You can learn the guitar when you're an adult. Or, you know, I can tell you as a parent of four 20-year-olds, you can't do everything for your kids. And that would actually be bad if you could.
I think it's really helpful to hear because I think there is that temptation that we've got to do everything, provide for them, that somehow we think we are somehow God present in some horrific way, that we have to do it all for them, and that their whole salvation as well is on our shoulders. And yet often the temptation is the other way as well, where we go, well, it's nothing to do. I can't save them because we have a good reformed sovereignty view of it. And it's all of God. We believe that it's salvation by grace alone. Oh, therefore I don't have to do anything. And actually the being faithful is the key, isn't it? I keep having to remind myself, actually, all I want to do is by the time the boys, we parented them as well, but actually that I can look back and think I did it as faithfully as I could. That I have no regrets because I wasn't as faithful as I could. I didn't do what the Lord had commanded me to do, and I'll leave the rest to Him to work out, because I can't change their hearts. I wish I could, but I can't.
What did you have in mind about the heart, Mark? What you found compelling about that?
Well, I think the heart is, it just goes to it, because otherwise I parent for behavior, and I can get behavior change by just putting in reward systems, and particularly over here, for you know, the school systems is all about kind of rewarding behavior, and you go up the chart and you go down the chart, and it creates good behavior, but it doesn't necessarily tackle the heart. And we're thinking, just here, we're preaching through Jeremiah, we're thinking Jeremiah 17 the other Sunday evening, and that at the end of the day, it is the heart where we see the responses ultimately come from. So if I'm not parenting to the heart, then actually I'm just kind of putting a plaster on the outside, on the wound, and not actually dealing with the actual real issues that are going inside my child. But that's hard. So how do I parent to the heart? Because behavior is easy. In one level, I can put in things that say, don't do this, do this, encourage this, punish this. But going to the heart, I think that's where we all struggle. That's where we, as parents, find it hard. And I think this is where the Lord is calling us. And I think that's where you're pretty sure you agree with this, Jack. So, I mean, how do we do it?
Well, let me. In my mind, I really appreciate this emphasis. You know, I recommend shepherding a child's heart all the time. Just think that's really a companion volume to the disciple making parent. Having said that, I also think that we've overcorrected in some ways. So, for example, you know, I had a mom of, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 year old, and saying, I'm just trying to get to his heart. And I said, he's only 4. He doesn't have much of a heart, you know. And so in one way, for young children, I think it is, you know, I would be a proponent for the getting obedience. And even as we're talking about the heart, but the main focus is on the training, is on the action. I think what's hard, though, is that those flip in, and you're a parent right now of 11 and 13-year-old, and so it's almost like we have to be two types of parents, because then their heart does grow, and it grows deeper. The purposes of man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws him out. And so it's easy to look at that 11 and 13-year-old and think, well, he's like the 5 or 6-year-old, you know, the 4-year-old. He doesn't really know why he hit his sister. He just did it. But no, a lot more is going on. And so I think that's a transition for us as parents to try and start asking more questions, become better pastors, counselors. And so part of that is, I think, a transition in our mind, but it's also setting aside time or space where we can talk about those things. So, and that's why I took my kids out on donut dates. I'm a big proponent. I don't know what the equivalent would be there.
Well, my boys, when I brought that little booklet with we did a bit of it, but they were like, yeah, Dad, if we lived in America, we'd do donuts, but yeah, we just go coffee instead. So yeah, it's not quite the same, but yeah, it's close.
Yeah. But what it,
get what Danish pastries and stuff.
Not quite the donuts, though.
Yeah, no, that's, but what that's doing is setting aside a space where you're saying, tell me what's going on. And you're asking questions. And, you know, especially as you can start disciplining yourself to, okay, this is going to be 30% me talking and 70% me listening, so that you're wanting to know, well, what are you interested in? What are you thinking about for your future plans? And then now tell me, you know, I just saw this, I just heard this thing about online bullying. Do you enter into that? And, you know, hey, you know, mom and I have, we have blocking software on our computer, but let me tell you why. Okay, so when you were a kid, we just did it, and you just needed to obey. But now, let me tell you why that is. And, you know, here's what you're going to hear. You know, you're going to hear Christians have a bad view of sex or whatever. So you put space to have those conversations. And certainly they're conversations that come up when they just sort of open up their hearts, and you just need to kind of go, oh, here's a teachable moment. But it, to me, putting space in that time, and to realize that it's a temptation, what you just said before, it's a temptation to turn our hearts away, which is Malachi 4, the implication is that sin causes the hearts of the fathers to turn away and the hearts of the children to turn away. So we can be, you know, I've said it this way again in the United States, but functionally we can be running an Airbnb service and an Uber service. So we're just providing a place to sleep and taxing them around instead of what's going on, you know, in my child. What are they thinking about? They're growing into be a young adult. And what's cool is you can, like, it brings depth to the love. Like, I like my kid. You know, he gives me a hard time, but yeah, actually, I like him.
There was a relationship.
Yeah, I think it's the different context. I mean, donuts are cool. I think when my kids are grown up, by the way, they're 30 and something. I got three of them, and
we'll remember on that one.
One's in their 30s, and the other two are in their late 20s. I think is the thing. But walking was quite a thing for us, like dog walking and chatting when we did that. Car journeys. There's a different quality. Family times, kind of meal times, are good. But, you know, when you got three children and sometimes other guests around, they're kind of chaotic. So the conversations are good. There's a lot of banter, as we'd call it, and lots of fun. But you wouldn't say they're particularly deep. And a conversation is a bit like on Facebook. It kind of starts and then it stops and something moves on and you never really finish it. Whereas going out on a car journey, on a walk, you've got more kind of back and forth and you can finish it. Really, really quick, trivial anecdote, but I've got two sons. I've got a daughter and then two sons. And I was with one of my sons and I had a conversation and he was talking about Christian things. And I said, sort of tentatively, like you do, so do you think you're a Christian? Because he'd been saying sort of stuff. And he said, yes. And I'll go, yes, that's brilliant. And so this all happened, right? And then just about a few months ago, I was recounting this, but I remembered the wrong son. So I said to one of my sons, okay, do you remember this conversation? And the other son said, no, it was with me when I became a Christian. So they're really good quality, but sometimes 10 years later, you've forgotten which child you were talking to. But overall, I remember those kind of walking times as being slowly working into conversations, and you're slightly stepping tentatively because you don't want to turn them away, but you're able. And I think it's often one-to-one, sometimes one-to-two, but not a big crowd, I think is the thing, whether it's donuts or walking or whatever else. So I really value that.
I think you've hit upon the key issue. The key issue is it's one-to-one and it's relaxed or it's partitioned in that we're just going to go for a walk or camping or something like that. But yeah.
You looked like you were going to say something there.
I was only going to say some of the other things that struck me in the book was the power of example, the power of discipline, not just to control behavior, but to give them a model for the authority of God. What I was emphasizing when I was reteaching it was that you can't expect your child to submit to the authority of God if they haven't learned to submit to the authority of their parents. That's not to say God can't change their hearts and so forth, but as a simple model of the way the world works, if they haven't learnt that authority means a good person in charge giving rules for good reasons that you need to submit to, that's a brilliant model that they can then apply to God and trust God like they trust their parents. And so I think that was helpful. Discipline, not just for managing behavior, but discipline for giving them the model of how they behave towards authority, God, and how they behave to each other, their siblings or the church. And probably a lot of problems in church life happen because Christians, you know, who God has worked in their hearts, weren't disciplined as children. So they don't know how to behave with other people.
Yeah, that's true.
Just for the purpose of the recording, the guest was nodding
and said yes. I'm just conscious that time is running out. Just in terms of what would you want to encourage folks to really be in their parenting? As we talked about communication, we've talked about heart, we talked about discipline. What things would you want to really emphasize, encourage, get us to think about more as we do this glorious work of parenting?
Yeah, I'd say it's the highest call, a super high calling. What a privilege to shape an eternal soul. And yet, everybody take a breath, because if you know how to coach soccer or football, you know how to disciple. So you know how to get excited about things and look at things and praise them, and you know how to imitate me. And so it's, on the one hand, it's this glorious privilege. On the other hand, it's very in and out, day to day, mundane, just a lot of little things throughout life. I think another thing which I emphasize in chapter 3 is that, and was true in my own life and is true in 95% my unscientific survey of those who grew up in a Christian home, Paul said to Timothy, continue in what you've learned and become convinced of. And so this idea that second-generation Christians often have a time when they're going to wrestle with their faith, and then they'll come out of it with my faith became my own. When I asked that question, 95% of those who said, I made a young profession of faith, but it was such and such a time that my faith became my own. And just expect that, just like we expect their baby teeth to grow out, fall out. We expect them to suddenly shoot up in height and just say, okay, this is, on the one hand, this profession of faith at a young age is not all there is. And on the other hand, I'm not going to be freaked out if there's doubts, if there's concerns, if there's wobbliness in the teenage years.
So is it fair to say that your primary role as a parent is to seek to faithfully disciple your children? You may not be successful, but you need to be faithful in it. Is that what you'd like to say?
Yeah. I think
that's what I'd like to say.
Yeah. That's, I want to be a faithful parent, and I want to find the quotation. I think there's a quotation by Spurgeon's mother when basically she just sort of challenged him and just said, "I've been faithful. You know, what you do is on your shoulders." And so, yeah, for us to be faithful, and God will grow us that way. So you as pastors know, you grow much more as you give out. Yeah, yeah. And so I think that's a whole different thing we could talk about, is that just the parents are missing out on God's agenda for their life, that these kids are for you to grow and to understand more and to grow in patience, and et cetera.
Where can we find out more? Are there links that you'd like to point us to, web links or other places where we could find out more?
And you have your own podcast.
Say that last part again.
You have your own podcast as well.
Yeah, I do have my podcast. It's called The Disciple Making Parent. So the ministry is called The Apollos Project, named after Apollos in Acts 18, that he was articulate and humble and brave and zealous as well, which I think is a goal for our kids. So theapollosproject.com. And you can sign up for the newsletter. And one of the things that I'm happy to do is to give away the audiobook if you purchase the book through Amazon, so whether Kindle or the physical book. And if you'll send an email to my administrator, admin, A-D-M-I-N, at theapollosproject.com.